no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.
Spy Talk, a podcast at the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, national security, and military operations.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Stein, and this is Spy Talk. One of the more venerable tropes in spy fiction and movies is the honey trap, where an official or opposition agent is inveigled into a compromising moment by a wily enemy, usually of the femme fatale variety. Blackmail ensues. But now there's a real-life social media update to the centuries-old ploy, as exemplified recently with the arrest of a retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel David Franklin Slater, a civilian employee at the U.S. Strategic Command in Nebraska. Those are the missile people. Slater apparently fell for what he believed was a woman in Ukraine via a social media dating app. Fatally smitten, he began sending this person, or quite possibly Russian intelligence, classified documents, proving yet again that when it comes to men, at least, the promise of love and sex beats common sense. As it happens, my guest today is an expert on the subject. His name is Henry Schlesinger, and he is the author of Honey Trapped, Sex, Betrayal, and Weaponized Love. Henry Schlesinger, welcome to Spy Talk. Your book, Honey Trapped, Sex, Betrayal, and Weaponized Love, I love the subtitle, traces the history of honey traps back to biblical times. It's as old as time, you might say, as old as sex and love. However, the reason we're talking today is because of the recent case of a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel by the name of David Franklin Slater, who apparently, or as is accused of, falling for an online honey trap in which he was inveigled into giving this person at the other end, supposedly in Ukraine, classified documents. So is the use of social media use is a new wrinkle in an old skill, right?
Right.
And it shouldn't be surprising. If you look at the intelligence world and the history of it as a whole, you see that tradecraft is an early adapter and adopter of new technology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you can look at Samson and Delilah, one of the most famous honey traps in history. Okay. And then you can go to the 19th century or early 20th century when they adapted photography, and that added new wrinkles to the game, photography.
Photography.
Right. And sound recording also to a certain extent.
Meaning someone is seduced into visiting a room for an assignation and where there are cameras and microphones.
Right. And the people can either clandestine or, surveil them and photograph them covertly, or they can burst into the room with the cameras and the flash and have the shock value.
We've seen that in movies.
But then you see them also adapting and adopting video. And you see, and so the adaption and adoption of internet to the game shouldn't come as a surprise.
Mm. Is this case of David Franklin Slater, the retired Army colonel, is that one of the first cases we've seen of use of social media and the internet for honey traps?
No, it runs back a few years. It was used in Pakistan. It was used in India with Pakistani intelligence. It was used most notably by Hamas against Israeli soldiers where they went onto a dating app. And were inveigled to download an application so that they can receive risque pictures. And the application gave an error message that it failed to download, but in fact had taken over their phones. Every aspect of their phone.
Now, Israel, as you know, is one of the most security conscious nations in the world. And yet the loins of the IDF soldiers triumphed over common sense. And they just fell for these pictures and enticements.
Right. Well, a lot of those that fell for it were conscripts, very young teenagers. And they had grown up with the internet. And even if they practiced due diligence, the app that they were told to download appeared on the Apple Store or the Google Store. So everything looked okay, and the correspondence looked okay. If you're a 19-year-old conscript, you're not really thinking about espionage, are you?
No, your guard is down. And of course, we suffer an onslaught of phishing attempts every day. I got one just yesterday afternoon that purported to be from UPS saying my delivery was delayed and call this number or click on this link. And they've gotten very sophisticated. It looked real, but I've seen these before. And we've seen reports over the years that Pentagon employees will click on these phishing links. And that gives entry to hostile intelligence services. So the honey traps is just kind of a tweak on what's been going on for years with phishing attempts.
Sure, the way it's used nowadays, it's adapted to phishing and the hacking, technology and social engineering.
Mm-hmm. And it's played, and this technique of honey traps has played an important role in political developments over time. I know in your book, Honey Trap, you talk about the fall of Yeltsin and the rise of Putin.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah. Not to get too deep in the weeds on it, but there was a honey trap on played on one of the politicians. And one of Putin's first public appearances, where the public really got to see him, the Russian public really got to see him, he talked about it, and he talked about it in a somber, businesslike fashion. It wasn't a scandalous, thing for him. And he made a very good impression on the Russian public in talking about this. The politician eventually dropped out. The tape was played as a public service on news stations in Russia, and Putin rose to power very, very quickly after that.
Was this a setup of this official?
Apparently, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, yes. But it was done very, very well. Putin talked about it with deep regret, and in a very businesslike fashion. He wasn't sensationalizing it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it became sensationalized on Russian television.
Yeah, the Russians seem to have been engaging in this in particular for a very long time, and with momentous effects. There was the case of in the 1960s, a British official brought down by a liaison with a Soviet agent.
That was more a case of people being very bad at their job than a honey trap, in my opinion anyway. Stephen Ward, who was acted as something of a pimp, had two clients. One was Trofimo, and the other one was a Soviet agent. Everyone, with one exception, in that debacle, had their career ruined, including the Soviet agent, including Trofimo, including the honey trap herself.
It's the honey trap. Particularly identified with the Russians, have they really excelled and been predominant in this particular technique over any other intelligence service we know of, including our own?
That's an interesting thing. All intelligence services, if you speak to any of them, they'll all admit to bribery. They'll admit to bugging phones. Some will admit to satellite surveillance. They'll admit to all manner of skullduggery. But they'll clutch their pearls if you mention honey traps. Yet all of them indulge, all of them use this trade crap because it's effective. Even the U.S., the most widely known one during World War II was Betty Pak, the wife of a British diplomat. And she was run jointly by the British and the Americans.
And what happened to her?
She married one of her targets and moved to France.
And who was the target?
A French diplomat, I believe.
And again, were the Russians somehow involved in that?
Nope. British and American operation.
Well, what happened with her? How was that a honey trap?
She was breaking in and seducing diplomats in Washington. And in one famous case, she broke into the Vichy embassy with the help of a diplomat, undressed in case the security guard would come in, or in case the security guard came in, so that she could pretend it being in a liaison with the diplomat. And they broke into a safe with the code books. The code books were, I believe, out the window, handed off out of a window on the first floor, taken to another location, photographed, and returned to the safe.
Interesting case. And during the depths of the Cold War, the CIA famously was using testing LSD on unsuspecting Americans in San Francisco, I believe. And this was exposed decades later in the New York Times. I was just wondering if there's known history of CIA employing honey traps against the opposition.
I haven't found any, to tell you the truth. I'm sure it's been done. The OSS certainly did it. I haven't found any in the CIA.
OSS was the World War II U.S. intelligence and paramilitary service. Give us an example of how they use honey traps during the war.
Well, Betty Pak would be a good example. She was run jointly by Americans and, you know, the British. There was another example of the Americans and British running another honey trap in which a clerk in the French, in the Vichy French embassy was compromised.
And how did they do that?
Apparently, she the clerk was a woman, and apparently they used a Romeo spy. She requested very little in terms of payment, but just wanted male companionship.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, when we talk about these honey traps, we're usually referring to the use of women. But in fact, we know the Soviets in particular used ravens, in other words, men.
Right, Romeo spy.
Yeah, Romeo spy. Tell us a little bit about that.
The person who became famous for Romeo spies was Marcus Wolf of Stasi.
And Marcus Wolf was the legendary East German spy chief.
Right. And he saw he was brilliant. And what he recognized and identified in Germany was a demographic anomaly, which was following two world wars, there was a lack of men in Germany and in West Germany as well, in East Germany and in West Germany. Because of that, women were taking jobs that would normally go to men.
Including in the military and the security services.
In the military and security service. And women were also lovelorn. So he launched a campaign of Romeo spies, sending them over to the West. It wasn't blackmail of that kind. It was long-term relationships. And some of these relationships went on for years. Some of them... They were fake married by a Stasi officer in a church, in a cooperating church. It wasn't a, you know, he regretted at the end that that's what he'll be known for, but that's what he's known for.
Yeah, well, he became sort of a legend in a fictional sense in the early John le Carré spy novels.
Le Carré denies that it's based on him.
Huh.
It's based on Marcus Lowe.
Well, there's a remarkable yeah. facsimile.
At one point following the fall of the wall, Wolf tried to inveigle Le Carré to participate in a series of debates, and Le Carré was having none of it.
Hmm. Why did he, I mean, that would have been great for publicity. Why did he turn that down?
I think context. He saw Wolf and he saw the Stasi not as nostalgic, but rather in terms of the brutality during the Cold War. That would be my best guess.
Hmm. Interesting. So he wasn't going to burnish Marcus Wolf's reputation in any
right.
way or rehabilitate him. Yeah. He was a bad guy forever.
Bad guy forever. He says, the only Wolf that I recognize is my lawnmower. I guess that's a brand in England.
Hmm. Hmm. Now, the Russians have employed this very successfully for a very long time. You tell the story in your book about Edward Ellis Smith, a CIA officer who arrived in Moscow in 1953 under diplomatic cover. And he became a target of the KGB in a honey trap operation, right?
Sure. He was so involved, he believed that he was in charge. I believe he was, it was his housekeeper. And he would brag about how she made a great martini. He became caught up in the James Bond of it, I believe. You know, I don't think he saw it coming, to tell you the truth. And he was immediately pulled after a short time.
So what happened? What did he do that compromised him?
He began sleeping with his housekeeper.
And then what happened? It was photographed or recorded?
It looks as if he was blackmailed. I'm not quite sure on that one.
Through, he was confronted with photographs or audio recordings?
Right.
Hmm. And was sent home, I guess.
Was sent home.
And his career did not flourish after that.
No.
What about the case of Maria Butina, the Russian agent who romanced a number of Americans in recent years and was then...
She's fascinating.
Because she was seen as romancing a couple of Americans, but what she incorporated... one was a Republican operative, a fundraiser, with a sketchy past, and the other one was the mail order guy. His name is escaping me now. The guy who invented drop shipping.
Mm-hmm.
But what she did is she used the sketchy Republican fundraiser as entree into tight Republican circles. And her Facebook page, she used social media in a new way. Her Facebook page and all of that featured photographs of Republican leaders, very conservative Republican leaders, and she used that to burnish her reputation within those circles.
Mm-hmm.
Go online, people were, you know, people will say that she was sleeping her way through Republican leadership, which is, you know, an absurd thing. What she did was she used one or two guys as access agents.
And she eventually was caught.
And she was eventually caught, imprisoned somewhat briefly, returned to Russia, and became a politician.
That's a risk of these honey trap operations, isn't it? You can get caught.
It's a risk of every operation, isn't it?
Sure, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So, any other cases of honey trap operations blowing up in the face of the perps that you know of? We have the case of Anna Chapman, was a Russian spy. She and several other Russian spies were rolled up in 2010.
Right. She became the poster child. She, the media dubbed her the hot spot.
Well, I got to tell you, I was at the Washington Post when that case broke. And I was, and whenever I wrote about Anna Chapman, I got a lot of social media repeats, a lot of attention. She seemed to use her good looks and savoir-faire to wheedle her way into some Democratic circles in New York.
Right. The thing that she did that was brilliant, she did a few things that was brilliant. She got into the VIP sections of the nightclub scene. She made friends with party promoters. And this is something that, you know, nightclubs were her milieu going back to when she was in Zimbabwe. The first trip to London that she took was was at the behest of a DJ that she met in Zimbabwe. Right? In London, she also hit the club scene there. And that's where you meet people. And in New York, she did it as well.
What a terrific reproach to find vulnerable people.
Vulnerable people of a certain type.
Of a certain type. People who might have access to power or secrets and or secrets.
Right. So men of a certain age. Now, let's be perfectly frank. Anna Chapman, looks will only get you so far in New York.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, if you're a good-looking woman, you might get into a nightclub, the hot nightclub, and they'll welcome you in, but you're sitting at the bar. You're not in the VIP section because they don't know who you are. To get into the VIP section, you have to know someone.
And she did.
And she did. The people she targeted weren't the club owners, weren't the club employees. They were what is called party promoters.
You know, that case is very interesting. Anna Chapman and the rest of them who were arrested. And there was some commentary at the time about, well, they really never got very far. You know, they came, they were sleeper agents. They were brought to develop their covers over time and look for targets who might be compromisable or just to wheedle their way into circles that might be able to provide them with useful intelligence, but they really didn't get that far. But what these critics missed, it seems to me, is that the Russians played a long game. The Cubans play the long game. They'll recruit lots of people and try to, you know, get them into a position where they can steal secrets. But it's, you know, they just play by the numbers that at least some of them will be successful. And we know that the Cubans have been particularly successful. And American intelligence is really different. We don't go out with a scattershot approach to recruiting spies. We look for people who immediately will have access to secrets. Of course, then we have walk-ins. People just tap on our windows, Russians, Chinese, North Koreans, Iranians, who just tap on our windows and volunteer to spy. So the case of Anna Chapman and the other Russian illegals was formed the basis of that television series,
The American.
The Americans. That was very that revealed or demonstrated some of the techniques that the Russians used, and it was very clever, a real notch above the usual spy movie spy television series. I'm interested in this lack of evidence that CIA has employed these techniques. It seems like we're kind of squeamish about it or don't see it as particularly useful. We employ other means. We rely on more traditional espionage rather than using honey traps. Is that what you would see as the reason we haven't been exposed as using it as much? Because
maybe we're just better at it.
And that's why it hasn't been uncovered. Of course, the opposition, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, et cetera, they don't have any interest in publicizing their cases. They don't hold public trials where all the dirty details are laundered in public.
Yeah. As I said, you know, intelligence agencies are very squeamish about, you know, admitting to it or, giving, you know, interviews about it. But they all do it.
Is social media the wave of the future? It's cheap. It's almost foolproof because, you know, it's done at a long distance. We're not humans involved in traipsing around the U.S. or Western Europe to create honey trap opportunities. It's, you know, some guy sitting at a computer at his desk in Moscow or Beijing or wherever operating a honey trap, and it's cheap. So is this, we're going to see a lot more of this, or have you noticed a trend that there's more use of social media?
It depends how it's used. In some cases, social media, there was a diplomat in Russia who visited a brothel with two women, with two working girls. And I imagine they wanted him out of Russia. So they didn't blackmail him. They just released his released a very disturbing video or bad video of him having sex with these two women. So that's one way it was. Used there in social media.
Hmm.
You know, they used to release it from newspapers, pictures to newspapers to embarrass someone.
Mm-hmm. Or threaten to. Yeah.
But threaten to. Mm-hmm. And now they can just do it with a few clicks, upload it to a social media. In terms of seduction, I think it's just one of the tools.
And how do you stop it?
You don't.
Now, how do you prepare people to not click on these links?
Well, I think people in the intelligence services have to be, you know, educated about it. Not click on the links, not give your, you know, phone numbers out, that kind of thing. But they did it during World War II as well, right? Keep mum, she's not so dumb, those posters.
Say again?
The famous poster in England with the femme fatale and all of the men of the different service branches lighting her cigarette. And the caption was, keep mum, she's not so dumb.
Ha. Ha.
The other famous poster would be, be like dad, keep mum, which is one I like.
Keep mum, she's not so dumb.
Yeah.
I love that. Maybe they need to dredge up those posters and use them again and put them all over the hallways of the Pentagon and every military base to remind guys, the lovelorn, that be wary of these invitations that come across your email. Anyway, Henry, this is such a fascinating topic, and I suppose it's fascinating because it's a bit lurid, you know, sex is,
right,
and that's why we're talking about it today.
If you look at it without, sex is an obscuring factor when you talk about this. Like money is an obscuring factor. But if you look at it and you're able to take the sexual component out, you see it as just another piece of tradecraft.
Hmm.
A way to manipulate someone into giving up secrets.
And successful over time, as you write in your book, honey traps have not only withstood the test of time, but their central role in intelligence operations has been documented throughout history and mythology and portrayed in the gaudy entertainments of popular culture. So it's always with us.
Right. There is two points I'd like to make, which fascinates me, continues to.
Okay.
In writing the book, you speak to people in the course of writing a book, and women more than men were fascinated by the idea of the femme fatale.
What do you mean by that?
The mysterious woman who, you know, can wrap men around their fingers, you know, that the femme fatale, she's popular fiction. They were fascinated by that.
Who was fascinated and why?
Women were more fascinated by it than men, in my experience in writing the book.
What do you mean they were fascinated by it?
Who was the most, historic femme fatale? Are there really femme fatales out there that, could attract men, with a blink of their eye or something, that kind of thing. And we've all seen this with these women in real life. You go to a party and there's always one woman there who has, three or four guys surrounding her, that kind of
thing. Or contrarily, one handsome guy.
Well, one handsome guy. Gone with the Wind, the lead character in Gone with the Wind, can be seen as a femme fatale.
Okay. Well,
In the beginning, you see over three or four different, suitors.
Mm-hmm,
that kind of
thing. Mm-hmm. It's just, honey traps are as natural as honey and traps and love
right.
and lust.
Yeah. The other point that's interesting to me is clothing, fashion, has always played, seems to historically play a role in the honey trap.
How do you mean?
In mythology and in reality. If you go back to the myth of Pandora, let's use that as an example.
Of the famous Pandora's box.
Right, she sent down essentially as a honey trap. In most of the paintings, the 19th and 19th century paintings, she's portrayed as naked in the painting. In reality, she was very well dressed when she came down from Olympus.
In Greek mythology.
In Greek mythology. In the original text, she was very well dressed. The gods acted as designers and stylists to send her down in an elaborate outfit to make her irresistible.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
If we fast forward to Bottina, Maria Bottina again, if you look at the pictures that she took that appeared on social media, they're perfect. They're perfect fashion pictures for the place and the time. There's a picture with her and Santorum.
Rick Santorum.
Santorum. And I showed that picture to a couple of stylists, fashion stylists in New York City, who had no idea who Rick Santorum was and no idea who Bettina was.
He was the senator from Pennsylvania.
These are people who aren't involved in politics. All they care about is clothing and fashion. They think about fashion. They talk about fashion. They read about fashion. This is what they do.
And they commented for you on
Bottina's
Maria Bottina's ensembles.
Right. And they said, they were sort of snobby about it. They said, mid-level Midwestern ball. That's how they categorized it.
So she would blend right in Washington.
She would blend right in Washington.
That's the style accent in Washington. Midwestern mall.
Midwestern mall. She wasn't wearing high fashion. She'd be right at home at a post-church barbecue. It's absurd to think that Santorum had any romantic designs on her. But when he saw her coming, there were no red flags. She looked like everybody else in his circle, right?
Okay.
Yeah. The same could be true with Anna Chapman. She wasn't wearing high fashion. She wasn't wearing high fashion. She was wearing mid-level, New York City, which means shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue or shopping at Bloomingdale. She wasn't spending $9,000 on a dress.
So she would blend right in, was the point.
She would blend right in the nightclub scene.
She didn't look like a threat.
She didn't look like a threat either, to the other women there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the women in that, I went to the nightclub scene years later, of course, but nothing she did in her raised any flags among these people. And these are people who live in the fast lane. And she was there in the fast lane, but she wasn't the fastest.
And she didn't draw inordinate attention.
She didn't draw any attention.
Attention, yeah. Well, I dare say that David Franklin's later is not the last time we're going to hear about honey traps, computerized or digital honey traps being used, and American servicemen and women and intelligence officers falling for them. Lust triumphs over common sense. yeah. in the situation, as has always been the case through, as you say, thousands of years.
And there's no plumbing the depths of the self-delusion that men can, you know, men's self-delusion.
Well, how they go from you know, what seems to be innocent dating to handing over classified information. I mean,
yeah. And of course, this woman loves me for myself.
Yeah, right. This person, this digital personality, just really loves me, and so I need the love, so I'll hand over classified documents to keep the love coming. Oh my God!
Let's not forget, it's a stepped process. Right?
Step by step, of course.
Yeah, you know, so it's not, you know...
It's seduction.
Yeah, it's a seduction. And all of espionage at some level, isn't that a seduction? All about agent operation?
That's true. That's what it's about. That's the heart of espionage.
So it's a natural fit.
Henry Schlesinger, thanks for coming on and spending this time with us on your busy day to talk about sex and seduction and intelligence operations. That's what we're here for. And that's it for this week's Spy Talk. Be sure to check out our complete podcast archive on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, do check out the spytalk.co news site on Substack, where we offer a steady diet of scoops and original analyses on the intersection of intelligence, foreign policy, and military operations. Just Google Spy Talk and you'll quickly find your way there. This edition of the Spy Talk podcast was smoothly produced, as always, by Kanai and edited by Molly Hawkey for MSW Media. And oh, by the way, that music you've been hearing, that's the soundtrack from the 2020 thriller by the name of, you guessed it, Honey Trap. That's it. See you around. I'm Jeff Stein.
For more original reporting and insights like this, subscribe to spytalk.co on Substack and follow us on Twitter at @talk_spy. If you enjoyed our podcast, subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MSW Media.
Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they
yeah.
are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.